Did you see the news story this week? There were reports that the 18-year-old daughter of actors Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt actually filed in court to drop Pitt from her last name. There was a hyphenated name. And they share six kids. Two other children are informally using only Jolie's name. They can't change it legally until they become 18. And again, you know, I'm not going to say that we're going to diagnose or we're going to assess exactly what happened here, but I want to use this story as a springboard to discuss an issue that I think is bigger than people think, and that is the issue of parental alienation. And with us to discuss this is Dawn Boettger. She is a licensed family therapist working with a New Day Counseling Center in Lombard, and she's very experienced in these issues. Dawn, thank you so much for joining us.
Karen, thank you for having me on the show. I'm grateful to be here.
So I know you care deeply about your clients and your patients and the children and the families that you counsel, and I know that you have some expertise. Can you explain simply what this means, this issue of parental alienation, and how it occurs?
Absolutely. It's turning the child against the other parent, often including things like manipulation, misinformation, emotional coercion. And what's interesting is it's beneficial to look at it from an attachment perspective regarding children. Attachment-based parental alienation integrates attachment theory principles into the dynamics, and the manipulating parent leverages the child's attachment bonds and vulnerabilities to undermine the relationship with the targeted parent. And this manipulation disrupts the child's secure attachment relationship with the targeted parent, leading to unjustified hostility, rejection, and estrangement.
So you see, you know, and you speak a different language than I do in some ways, and this attachment issue is very, very important. And the way I see it is I'm getting divorced from my husband. I have to basically get him out of my life. And to the extent my children have a bond with him, I don't want them to have a bond because I want to get rid of him and they should get rid of him too. Now, that's probably a very simplified way of looking at it. But when you see that and you see the mom, and this goes both ways, absolutely both ways with the gender, you know, dad really doesn't love you that much, otherwise he would be paying more support. Or dad didn't really want to spend time with you this Sunday, he'd rather go golfing, or whatever it is. And the children start to realize that, you know, that, oh gosh, this man who I loved really doesn't love me, right?
Yep.
It's horrific. And tell me, in what circumstances this happens? Does it happen often? What kind of people do this kind of thing to their children?
You know, any parent who would do this to their children has obviously a lot of issues going on, and personality disorders are often part of the bigger picture, not always, but often, because it's involving tactics, manipulative tactics like emotional coercion, where the parent influences the child's feelings and attitudes towards the other parent, guilt tripping, fear-mongering. And fear-mongering can involve the parent exaggerating or fabricating potential dangers or threats associated with the other parent in order to make the child feel scared or unsafe around them. So even just subtle comments like, you know how your dad doesn't know how to follow directions? It starts with little comments like that, and it just consistently fosters a sense of fear and mistrust toward the targeting parent, and it happens over time, causing the child to distance themselves or reject the parent based on unfounded fears. And it's harmful. It's a very harmful form of emotional manipulation, negatively impacting the child. And over time, what happens is they, as you mentioned, the example of someone wanting to get somebody out of their house or get them out of their life. Sure, I think people getting divorced sometimes get frustrated by that. But if you look at it from a different perspective, if you shame the parent, you shame the child. So what sort of a parent would want to hurt their child in order to gain a legal strategy?
And, you know, and what I have seen, Dawn, over the years later, this happens, and you can weigh in on it, but, like, let's just say that dad was bad-mouthing mom, and then the kids have no relationship with mom. They're afraid to go over the house. They're disrespectful to her. They're swearing at her. They've basically said, mm-hmm. I'm not even going to see my grandparents because they're part of the mother that I hate. And then years later, they realize, maybe when they have children, maybe when they get married, that all of those things that were said by dad against mom were false. Somehow, they figure it out on their own because the brainwashing is not present anymore. And then they're dealing with the massive guilt and the massive anger at the parent who was lying to them. And that causes so many issues that I'm sure you see them as well.
And what the parent did initially to win the child, they end up creating what they feared the most, and they end up losing the child. The only way around it is early and effective intervention, and that can be challenging because you have potentially an alienating parent then who can either cherry pick a professional or they end up with a professional who's overly neutral. And so here they go to get help. And instead of working with the family and each family member to the extent that is necessary, the cherry-picked therapist validates one parent's perspective, hindering the progress towards resolving the alienation and restoring the healthy family dynamic. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum would be a professional who's overly neutral. And in cases of parental alienation, that causes issues not to be addressed, the power dynamics, the manipulation not to become addressed. And in the long and the short of it is it does not protect the child from the emotional harm that it's causing.
Well, and I see it too where, and maybe we're saying the same thing, is when the children get into therapy and the kids are saying, Dad doesn't keep me safe. Dad doesn't follow directions. Dad leaves the oven on. Dad doesn't pay child support. And then the therapist, instead of saying, whoa, where are you getting these facts and are they true, basically turns to dad and says, Dad, well, make sure you turn off the oven. And Dad, why are you not following directions? As if that justifies a child being disrespectful and not loving a parent, because, of course, our parents are not perfect. And, you know, so I find that dynamic, and even judges miss it all the time. They don't get it.
And when the child does make complaints about the targeted parent, you'll typically find the parent who's doing the alienating, pandering to them. Not saying, hey, listen, that's your mom or that's your dad. We need to figure this out. This is adult issues. They will subtly encourage the manipulation, even while anyone else who is hearing it on the outside would find what's being said ridiculous, but it's so subtle it might be hard to catch.
Well, absolutely. And we all know children look up to their parents, and even an eye roll and even just a comment, just an aside comment, can be so harmful. And so let's look at the positive thing before we take a break and give our listeners who are going through a divorce, who have been through a divorce, who have loved ones who are separating with children, tell us how important it is to encourage that good relationship with the other parent, despite the fact that you may not think they're a good parent, despite the fact that you don't love them anymore, in spite of the fact that you might actually hate them. How important
Absolutely.
Is this, Dawn? What are the things that a parent should do to encourage that relationship?
I think the first thing is to ask themselves, let's say if they hate the other parent or feel so terribly about them, is their hate more than their love for their child? So if their love for their child transcends all those angry feelings they have towards their ex or soon-to-be ex, the goal is to prioritize the well-being of the child, maintain a consistent, positive presence in their life, seek support from an experienced mental health professional, go to a support group, document instances where there's alienation. Unfortunately, the other parent probably is way ahead of them on that because they do it naturally, and this is something that you have to be told to do. And then get the legal interventions necessary.
And thinking about Father's Day coming up next week, you know, you have take your child out and get that card and make sure there's a, you know, a handmade gift and encourage that relationship and tell your kid he's your dad. You should give him, you know, a happy Father's Day and encourage a wonderful day for the child to have, because a child having both parents is a good thing, whether they're separated or not separated.
Yep, because, again, shaming the parent shames the child. So if you support the other parent, you're supporting your child.
When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how children fare in a divorce and some things that you can maybe keep in mind when you're going through a divorce, or if you are a divorced family, how to keep the acrimony out of the family equation. And if you have a question or a comment here, 312-981-7200. We're talking to Don Boettger on WGN. We're talking to Dawn Boettger. She is a licensed therapist, and she's with a New Day Counseling Center in Lombard. That's where she could be reached. She's excellent at what she does, and I thank you for joining us. Let's talk a little bit, Dawn, about divorcing and how it affects the children. Is it possible for children to survive a divorce intact and being emotionally healthy? Is it possible?
That's a good question, because I used to think it wasn't. I once thought years ago that the end result is divorce is bad. And what I've learned over the years is it's not married or divorced. It's functional or dysfunctional. So if parents are married, but it's really dysfunctional, one could argue that divorce would be better. So then I think it really is how the parents handle the divorce that makes all the difference.
So when you see a high conflict divorce, and we use those terms all the time, we see maybe one parent has got narcissistic tendencies and is very controlling or dominating or manipulative, and the other parent maybe is passive. But, you know, there's all different combinations of dysfunction.
Yeah.
But, you know, in these high conflict divorces, I mean, it harms the children. It can't help but harm the children, right?
It absolutely does. And I think ideally it's a collaborative approach. If the legal system is involved, it's a collaborative approach with them. If it's just therapeutically, it's looking at the situation overall at the beginning and coming up with rules of engagement, coming up with the pitfalls that can be learned from people who've gotten divorced previously, and identifying the best way to have open communication. How do we respect each other's boundaries? Because if we respect each other's boundaries, we teach the children a level of safety and security that's necessary, because that is who the focus is. The focus is on the kids. Not speaking badly about the other parent. Let the kids be in the forefront of all decisions. Even if you don't agree with another parent, it doesn't matter. If they don't want to talk to you at baseball, that's fine. Be polite. Be on your way. But it's this, I think often what happens is, even in more innocent divorces, it's a conflict of what the other parent believes reasonable boundaries should be. So you have two parents who might be trying really hard, but they each have a different perspective on what reasonable boundaries are. So I think establishing what are our rules of engagement moving forward would be beneficial from the beginning. And it could be done from a therapeutic setting as well.
And, you know, one of the problems that I have seen doing family law over 37 years is that the court system is a system of adversary litigation. So the first thing you file in a divorce, if you're going to file, is a divorce petition that says, hey, you know what? I'm the better parent. I, you know, am better able to take care of the children. I'm, you know, you should pay me my child support. You should pay me this, that, and the other thing. And so when you have those kinds of public documents that you are forced to file as an attorney, you have now pitted the two parents against each other right from the beginning, instead of it being a, hey, you know what, we've agreed to not have this family anymore as an intact unit. We're going to have two families now, and how are we going to cooperate to get this done? And the litigation system is probably the worst way to do that, and I'm sure you would agree.
Yes. And so that's the issue, too, right? So ideally a collaborative divorce would be, you know, there's a legal side to that. But even in my office, I've had people come in with all the paperwork. They've sat down. They've done the work together as a couple, recognizing they're getting divorced, recognizing the benefits of doing things in a beneficial way to the children. And they have sat and they have done it. And they have paid an attorney to review their paperwork. And they just file it. It rarely happens, but it does. Because often there's too many issues that the parents need to get resolved. And then the kids end up being triangulated in the middle. So I think knowing that stuff... And the other thing, too, Karen, I want to bring up is the documenting. I noticed on Amazon there's like a divorce journal documenting book, which just shows... I mean, anyone could get a notebook. But it's the idea that people are being encouraged to document to create a case. So we're not creating a case, but we're creating rules of engagement to move forward in a healthy way. That would be a much better approach. And I think in a therapeutic setting, that definitely can happen. Some couples can do it on their own. It's not very common, but it can be done that way as well.
I mean, you're absolutely right. I have clients come to me who have, you know, a year or two of calendar diaries about how many hours she spent and I spent and what he said and what she said and what, you know, I did homework for 32 minutes and he only did homework for 12 minutes. And, you know, you're sitting there and you're watching what is going on here, which is a gathering of ammunition rather than a focus on the well-being of a child. And again, it's hard. It, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, to put aside that competitive nature, that feeling of protectiveness that you want to have your child near you because you think you're the better parent. But it really does not work well in the long run.
Yeah, and I think trust is a big thing, too. If there's someone who could be trusted, if parents can trust you with their kids, they are more likely to trust you with their family. And it gives you an opportunity to let people know what it could look like in the next 3 years if a more effective approach is not taken. And there's just some agreement on how to engage with each other and to proactively uncouple, move forward, and let the children just be children.
And it's interesting because some of the decisions that parents fight over seem to me to be trivial in comparison with the fight that they're exhibiting in front of their children about it. You know, I mean, I want him to play football. No, I want him to play soccer. And they fight about it. And the kid probably just wants to have peace in his household. You know,
absolutely. You know, if you were to look at one thing you've learned by working with these families, what's the one piece of advice you'd give them?
I always say, look at the long run. You're going to be dancing at their wedding together. You're going to be there for the birth of children. You have a long-term relationship with your ex-spouse, whether you like it or not, and you need to deal with it in a way that's measured and kind and supportive, and you have to grit your teeth.
And at the end of the day, if they didn't get married, they wouldn't have those children. So even though they feel all these feelings, the person who they're feeling so negatively about is actually one of the greatest gifts they've ever received. Because if they didn't meet that person, no matter how bad they're perceiving them to be, they wouldn't have the children that they're now potentially fighting over.
That's absolutely true. Dawn Bedker, thank you so much for joining us. Dawn is a licensed therapist, family therapist with a New Day Counseling Center. And if you want to reach out to me, I can give you her contact information. But I think this was a great conversation for upcoming Father's Day. Dawn, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Thank you for having me, Karen.